What's up, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Laying the Points with Farley Betts. It is June 13th, and we are going to talk about quarterbacks in the NFL, specifically a few quarterbacks who I really want to hone in on, assumptions that many people, pundits, experts, analysts, bettors, are making about a few quarterbacks this year, this season in the NFL, and the reality that I think might be missing from some of those analyses on these quarterbacks. Quarterbacks, the most important part of a handicap, right? The most important player on the field, the quarterback and coach, how symbiotic that relationship is, how great of a leader the quarterback is, how clutch the quarterback is. They are the most important piece, the centerpiece of every team. So pretty important to talk about if we're talking about NFL handicapping and NFL betting. I'll start by talking a little bit about the NBA Finals and Game 4 and what I think about what's going on there. Man, if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan or if you were a Dallas Mavericks bettor last night, not a good result. Probably not what you were expecting or definitely not what you were hoping for, especially in that second quarter, fourth quarter. The fourth quarter, they kind of surged, but we'll get to that in a second. My name is Farley Betts, Chris R. Farley to be exact, at Farley Betts on X or Twitter. 5 years going as a professional handicapper, a public-facing professional handicapper. I won circa in 2021. I need to get back to my winning ways in that contest. I'll be out there again this summer in Vegas to put in a few more entries. And over 200 units won in the past four seasons in NFL and NBA. Host of this great podcast, Laying the Points. We'll be with you all summer once a week, talking mostly NFL betting with a few other bets and recommendations and strategies that you might want to consider built into these podcasts as well. But for today, probably going to be a little bit quicker because we don't have as much content. Just want to talk about these quarterbacks. Let's talk about the NBA Finals first. I'll start off by saying this, which is obvious, right? Luka Doncic should kind of be ashamed. I mean, he should look at himself in the mirror and blame himself for the fact that the Dallas Mavericks lost that game, because not only is he just a wide open hole on defense, right? He's like not doing much of anything defensively. He also just isn't being a good leader by complaining about the refs, you know, not getting back on defense because he's complaining about the refs, complaining about the refs after the game as well, yelling at his bench to challenge the fucking call, right? Like he screamed that at Jason Kidd in the bench as soon as he thought he took a charge. You know, it's not a good look for a guy who could be the best player in the NBA. And if he just got a little more fit, like I think a big part of the defensive issue is that he's not that fit, right? You look at a guy like Jason Tatum, who's just absolutely chiseled out of stone, young, agile. You know, he can get by Luka without even trying, as can a lot of these Boston Celtics. Jaylen Brown, same thing. Derek White, we saw it all game. Drew Holiday. But he's just not that fit, you know? And Luka has to start taking that seriously. I mean, he comes into every season, you know, just looking a little soft. He's a big dude. Like, I know he uses that power to get to the spots he wants to, but I don't know if it's sustainable, especially if you're going to go through the Western Conference to get to the NBA Finals, which is an absolute slogfest, right? It's like, I mean, it's as hard as it gets to get to the NBA Finals, especially compared to what the Boston Celtics have been through in the Eastern Conference postseason. I mean, not even close to the same experience as the Dallas Mavericks, and it looks to be playing a big part in the series. Boston is clearly the better team. I mean, they're clearly the more talented team, but I'd like Dallas to keep this a little closer because they've played so well. Their defense has played so well, and I thought they had the two best players on the court. I think Boston's fitness and the ease of which they got to the NBA Finals is certainly having a big effect on these NBA Finals, and Luka is the, you know, the absolute greatest example of that, right? He looks tired. And you can't get to this part of June and look that tired and play that tired and just complain about the refs and expect to win an NBA championship. You know, it's just not going to happen. But I will say this, because I have to call out Boston fans, because Boston fans are just so fucking annoying. Not all Boston fans, obviously. Like, if you're listening to this show and you're a Boston fan, thank you for listening. I'm not saying all Boston fans are so fucking annoying, but the annoying thing is, we're going to have to go on X on Twitter and wherever you're reading sports takes, and we're going to have to listen, read all these happy Celtics bettors, and they're going to completely ignore the fact that the Eastern Conference was incredibly weakened this season. They're going to completely ignore the fact that the Celtics probably had the easiest slate of postseason rounds to get to the NBA Finals, maybe in NBA history. An injured Miami Heat team without Butler, without Rozier, an injured Cavs team, and the Indiana Pacers who can't play defense and who are, this is their first time in the playoffs. Right? And they got through an injured Knicks team, or else it probably would have been the Knicks, and the Knicks would have given Boston a tougher series, I think. They're also not going to admit that Jason Tatum disappears in the fourth quarter. Everyone's going to talk about Jason Tatum and how he attacked at the beginning of that game, and he played really well because people love to celebrate and cheer for Jason Tatum. And I get it. Like, Deuce Tatum is really cute. Jason Tatum seems like a great guy, like a good person, has the right mindset. But whatever this like cult following of Jason Tatum and people that think he's a superstar, you can't disappear in the fourth quarter. And even in that last game, as well as he played earlier, and he did play some good defense at the end of the game, right? That's more than we can say about Luka. But he missed every shot. He had an easy slam dunk. Okay, he made his slam dunk. Anybody in the world who can slam dunk could have made that dunk. they could have got those 2 points. But other than that, brick, 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 brick. Like, he just either avoids the ball or he throws up bricks in the fourth quarter. And if you're calling yourself a superstar, if you're supposed to be a superstar, can't do that. Those are the moments where you have to be the best. And it's a little, it's a little bit, like, isn't this championship going to be a little underwhelming? Especially if you're a Jason Tatum guy, knowing that the only reason why Jason Tatum and the Celtics were able to win these NBA finals is because they built a super, super team supporting cast around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I mean, their core could not get it done. They needed Derek White. They needed Jrue Holiday. They needed Kristaps Porzingis, who tilted games 1 and 2 extremely in their favor with his defense, with his shot making, even with how poor Dallas played in some of those quarters of game 1 and 2. I'm not sure if Boston wins without Kristaps. Good response from Boston in game 3. They did a lot of things right. But don't tell me that Jason Tatum is the man and that he's a superstar, and that he's the reason why they're winning this series. Like, he should not be the MVP. I think that's beyond obvious at this point. As far as game 4 goes, I'll put it this way. There's no chance in hell that I'm going to be betting on the Dallas Mavericks. When you see just the athletic and endurance difference between the Celtics and the Mavericks, the way that the Celtics are staying calm as a team. I mean, again, in the fourth quarter and in those moments where they need to stay calm, it's Jrue Holiday. It's Al Horford. It's Derek White. And it's a little bit of Jaylen Brown. It's not a lot of Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum stepped up when he had to in the late first quarter, early second quarter. Yes, that's true. Not in the fourth quarter. Kind of the most important quarter. And he was a bit frazzled in the first quarter. But, that's the thing, right? The Celtics are just so fucking talented. They have so much depth. What are you going to do? Unless you play an all-world game against the Boston Celtics, you're not going to win. And we're seeing that from a Mavericks team that looks tired, doesn't have the same depth, and some of these pieces just a little too new to the team, like PJ Washington and Gafford, to make, sustainable impacts. Game 4, I can only look at Boston. Not going to make that same mistake again. I would only look at the under. I mean, these games are really slowing down at certain points. We saw some more threes land in this game. And I need to mention, Kyrie Irving was spectacular. It certainly wasn't on Kyrie. I don't love that final shot he took, but it's certainly not on Kyrie. He finally really stepped up. I mean, assists, shot making all game. He played a beautiful game. But need the whole team. Need the whole team, and you need your your star player, Luka, to not foul out and not be a crybaby on every other play. Okay, let's talk about quarterbacks in the NFL. And I'm going to hone in on a few because I want to just talk about them more, because I think we're hearing a lot on the Twitter, on the X, on social media, on podcasts, on, you know, dumb shows on ESPN, on sports shows all over the world about some of these quarterbacks. We're hearing grand assumptions. We're getting hyped up about the NFL season. And I would like to just take a step back and actually take a deeper look at some of these situations for some quarterbacks who are in very interesting positions, new positions this year, comeback positions. I'm going to talk about a few and really hone in on those, and then get to some other quarterbacks very quickly at the end. But again, if you're an NFL bettor, an NFL handicapper, if you're playing in an NFL contest or even in fantasy, quarterback play, right, and what to expect from a quarterback in their situation is the single most important factor of any NFL game. Now, I know, you know, the sharps out there, the seasoned pros are going to say the most important thing is the market, is reading the market. Of course, that's true. I'm talking about on the football side, okay? Besides the number, besides the market, which if you don't understand the NFL marketplace at this point, you know, grabbing closing line value, grabbing numbers early, like closing line value doesn't always work, right? But these are strategies, approaches that work long-term in any sport, but especially in the NFL where the number is so damn sharp because they know they have so many eyes on this game week to week. The quarterback on the football side, nothing is more important. And some teams like Lamar Jackson and Baltimore Ravens, you know, they're still going to be engineered and focused on their run game. Pittsburgh will probably still be run-based. I mean, some quarterbacks might not matter as much to their team if they have a great defense and a great run game. But at the end of the day, when the big plays need to happen, when they have a tougher matchup, it's the quarterback that's leading, making the throws, bringing his team down the field. And there's a huge difference, right? Like, I always compare it to the military, because not everybody is made for the military in the sense that they can handle the stress that comes with it. Like, when I went to basic training and did all that, what I would always echo to people is that anyone can join the military. Like, there's nothing substantially difficult about enlisting in the military in a tangible way. But when we talk about intangibles, right, calm and cool and collected, and really nerve-wracking, pivotal moments of a game, a quarterback and someone in the military is something very similar. All eyes on you. You got to lead the squad. What are you going to do? You're going to get shaken up. You're going to capitulate. You're going to complain. You're going to quit. Or you're going to pull through, right? When the bullets are flying, when things are getting scary, when there's a drill instructor yelling in your ear, the kind of guy that you just know could kill you, right? They're terrifying for a reason. That's why you go through basic training. That's why you get to those things so you can go through that stress. And certain guys in this NFL football league, certain quarterbacks are built for that moment more than others. And some situations are built for them more than others. So let's get to it. Kirk Cousins. The assumption about Kirk Cousins is that he'll thrive in a dome. And he has so much talent around him. Kirk Cousins, arrows pointing up. The reality is, one, that depends on the offensive line. Now, if you read on Pro Football Focus or a lot of sites, they're going to say the Atlanta Falcons have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. I'm not so sure about that. If you look at every one of their offensive linemen, only Jake Matthews is graded better in pass blocking. All the other guys are graded better in run blocking. Pretty good at pass blocking, but not great. They were 21st last season in sack percentage, over 7% of snaps. Their quarterback was sacked, and that was with mobile quarterbacks, Desmond Ridder, Tyler Taylor Heineke. Now, the defense is good, not great. I mean, they're better against the pass. They have some elite talent in their secondary. But bad time of possession marks, 23rd because they really couldn't ultimately keep their offense on the field. And a lot of that is because of the sacks, right? You can't entirely depend on your run game. It means more pressure on Kirk Cousins this year. Brand new team for Kirk. This is his third year now. 35 years old. I'm sorry, not third year, third team. He's 35. He's still undersized. It's a new weapons. It's a new system. That's a lot at this point for Kirk. It's probably a lot that they drafted Michael Penix Jr. as well. Now, Raheem Morris, I think he's going to be a much better fit for the Atlanta Falcons. But, you know, he's still unproven. Comes from the Rams, along with their offensive coordinator and their defensive coordinator. Offensive coordinator Zach Robinson comes from the McVay tree, having learned there about 5 years, climbed the ranks. He's a McVay guy. Usually that's a good thing. I believe he's 37 or 38 years old. Seems promising. Jimmy Lake also comes from the Rams, but more college experience. He's a head coach at Washington, defensive guy or defensive coordinator or defensive lines coach at Boise State. A lot of time in college, but you know, all these guys coming from the West Coast, there's a time change, a cultural difference on the East Coast. Lots of new on this team. Lots of new things on this team. And the opening schedule is tough. Pittsburgh, at Philly, Kansas City, Nolens, Tampa Bay. That could easily be 1-4, 0-5. I think it's at least 2-3. So my conclusion here is that the assumption about Kirk Cousins thriving is mostly wrong, especially early in the season. I think it's going to be a little clunky for Kirk and for the Atlanta Falcons. And don't get me wrong, they have a lot of talent, right? You got Bijan Robinson, you got Drake London, young guys, young talent, and their offensive line can be pretty damn good. It's not consistent enough in pass blocking. Kirk is going to hope that he gets that pass protection, or else we know that Kirk is not a great quarterback if he doesn't. Gets really shaken up really quickly. Let's move on to Joe Burrow. The assumption is that the Bengals will compete for the AFC North title and probably a playoff run with a healthy Joe Burrow. And I think that assumption is mostly right, because the reality is last year the Bengals would have made the playoffs with Joe. No doubt about it in our minds. They almost did with Jake Browning. Jake Browning played really well in a few of those games at the end of the season, but ultimately didn't win, like one game away, essentially, from taking them to the playoffs. Bengals always starting off slow, so they had to recover at the end of the season again. Jake Browning just couldn't do enough. But if that's Joe, Bengals are going to the playoffs, and then they are a very dangerous team, as we know, in those NFL playoffs, in the AFC playoffs. Real depth on their offensive line now. Real depth on their defensive line, especially at defensive tackle, Sheldon Rankins and B.J. Hill coming over there. Two great defensive tackles at pass rushing the quarterback, right? Getting to the quarterback. Elite pass rush already with Sam Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson, and now they got those guys in the middle. The running back room, we'll see. We'll see about the running back room, because it's a little sketchy. But hey, this is a professional organization, right? Like, they have hints of the New England Patriots of the past and the way Kansas City runs their operation, the fact that they have a great coaching staff, there's continuity, they have a great, like, holistic perspective. You can tell as a team the way that they handle things, like in that crazy moment against the Bills 2 seasons ago, you know, seeing an injury like that on the field, how classy they were. Just the way that they've responded to Kansas City. I mean, Burrow is the only quarterback who has beaten Mahomes more than Mahomes has beaten him. And he makes it look easy sometimes. Like, he's not stressed at all about it. Cool, calm, collected. Now, remember game 2 against Baltimore last year? Before Burrow got injured, he went right down the field and put the Bengals ahead of the Ravens early in the first half. And he did it surgically. He did it easily. I just feel like the Bengals would have won that game, and that would have been this surge into the playoffs, but it didn't happen, right? Because he got injured. But big difference is Cincinnati has started 3-3 in the last 2 seasons. Slow starters, but there's no excuse for another slow start. They're scheduled to start off New England. That needs to be a win. Kansas City, okay, we'll see. But we know they can beat Kansas City. Washington, Carolina. Okay, Baltimore, they're in your division. Revenge game. And then the Giants. That should at least be 4-2. It could be 5-1. It better not be 3-3. Like, there's no excuse for Cincinnati and Joe Burrow if they go 3-3 this time. The end of their schedule is nice, too. Weeks 15 through 18, Tennessee, Cleveland, Denver, and Pittsburgh. So they're set up well. They're going to keep those wide receivers. I'm not worried about that. So the assumption is mostly right. The Bengals will compete for the AFC North title this year. I think they might win it. I think that's worth a bet. I think they're absolutely going to make the playoffs. And I think they are the biggest threat to Kansas City with a healthy Joe Burrow. Jalen Hurts. I hate talking about positive things for the Eagles, but there is some positive here. There's no doubt about it. The assumption is that Jalen Hurts will thrive this year, thanks in part to Saquon Barkley. And, of course, a really talented offense returning. Now, Jalen Hurts, I don't know if he's going to succeed because of Saquon. Take that, you know, take it from a Giants fan, okay? He's injury prone. He doesn't run as well between the tackles like he did in college. I mean, obviously, there are fewer holes, smaller holes. He's just a burst runner. Like, he's a burst guy. He's a super athlete. But like a tactical professional running back, I wouldn't assume that he's just going to go over there and thrive. And the big question mark about their offense is offensive line, right? Because no more Jason Kelce. He was the brains of that operation, probably just as much as Jalen Hurts, the way that he led that offensive line and just kind of engineered things at the line of scrimmage. I think their defense will improve. We've talked about this on previous podcasts. Vic Fangio is a professional defensive coach. He knows what he's doing. He can turn around defenses. And I think he's going to be their biggest difference maker this year. I mean, he's aggressive. He has roots in Philly, went to college there. Just a tremendous upgrade for the Eagles in game-to-game motivation, the way he coaches, and, of course, his schemes. I mean, that's less pressure on Jalen Hurts if the Eagles' defense gets back to what they can do. With that defensive line, they have a lot of talent in their secondary. Shouldn't be that much pressure on Jalen Hurts game in and game out. He's going to get all banged up at the end of the year again if that happens. Paris Campbell, I like that they picked him up. Really nice fit at the number three for wide receiver. Scheduled medium, I would say. Winnable, achievable. And as long as Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore, new offensive coordinator, previous one for the Cowboys, and then where did he go after that? I forget. But good fit. If he's a good fit, then this could be the year that the Eagles return to the Super Bowl. I don't think the 49ers are going to do it. I think it's really hard to do that if you're the 49ers with their schedule this year. But, you know, again, playing devil's advocate a little bit here, I have to talk about a weakness. Nick Sirianni, supposed to be billed as their CEO coach, right? He's got an expert defensive coordinator now. He's got an offensive coordinator that teams go after because he's young and innovative. So what are you going to get in the way, Nick? The kind of guy that talks about Giants fans yelling at him while he's walking around. He talks about, or he yells in the tunnel after games. Yeah, how about them Cowboys? Like, that's not a head coach. That's not a CEO. Like, shut up, dude. Lead this team. Stop being a child. If you ask me, he's a Achilles heel for this team sometimes. But he might have put all the right guys around him to be a success. Daniel Jones, let's stick in the NFC East. Now, the assumption is that he and the Giants will mostly suck in 2024. I get why that's hard to argue against, right? We haven't seen that much from Daniel Jones. The Giants, you know, after a good year in 2022, kind of came back to reality in 2023. Of course, Daniel Jones getting injured didn't help. But another look at the Giants, one of the easier schedules in the NFL. Now, they have to play in the NFC East, but starts really soft, Minnesota, Washington, and then Cleveland. There's a real soft part in the middle, weeks 8 through 14, Pittsburgh, Washington, Carolina, bye, Tampa Bay, Dallas, okay, and then the Saints. And this is beyond a prove-it year for Daniel Jones. Like, think about that Arizona Cardinals game last year when they were, you know, they started off poor, as they always do. They needed that win against the Cardinals. I believe it was week two or week three. It goes off. 321 yards passing, 59 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns. Daniel Jones can do that. And this wide receiver room for the Giants, look out, has been vastly improved. Malik Nabers is the real deal. Just ask anybody in Giants camp who's watching him. Darius Slayton is a seasoned pro at this point. Tough guy, can make all the catches. Wendell Robinson, year three. Jalen Hyatt, year two. They got some real speed. And reports from camp are saying they have a lot of chemistry in this group. Daniel Jones has better weapons, that's for sure. And their defense is better, too. More depth in their secondary. They're young, but they're talented. And Brian Burns, bringing him over, really elevates that defensive line, that 3-4 base unit. And of course, he's going to be at the linebacker position on the edge. But they could end as a top-5 unit in sacks. I mean, linebackers are better. McFadden is better than you think. Bobby Okereke is top-10, according to Pro Football Focus. And then they brought in Brian Burns. They got Kayvon Thibodeau, Sexy Dexy, Dexter Lawrence. And we're not even talking about guys like Isaiah Simmons and Azeez Ojulari, who give them great depth. So this is a Giants team who should be improved. They have a pretty darn good roster, like a much better roster than 2-3 years ago. So you got to give Joe Shane and Brian Daboll some credit there. And Daniel Jones, in a absolutely 110% prove it year, is going to be hyper motivated to go out there and play his best football. I mean, the way he talks in interviews and stuff too, he is ready to go. And you got to love that scene from DJ, who doesn't show a lot of emotion. So I think that the assumptions are mostly wrong. I think the Giants outperform expectations this year. Maybe they don't get over their win total. I think they do. I think they get to 7. But I do think that the Giants are going to be a really good ATS companion, a team that's going to cover a lot for you, like they did in 2022. So look out for that as the Giants cyclically get underrated. They could be a great covering team. Josh Allen. The assumption is we're just going to reload and Josh Allen magic is going to take over and the Bills are going to be just fine. The reality, look at that wide receiver depth chart. Not very good. Just our opinion. Not very good. Josh Allen to Dalton Kincaid is going to be huge this year because he's a big, reliable target. Like, I think that's great for fantasy prospects. But they lost some guys on defense. They're in a super hard division. For me, the best chance for Buffalo was last season, and they just had way too many things go wrong. Bad luck, bad decision-making, poor play at the end of some games, too many turnovers. You know, we look at week one. Like, how did they blow that game against the Jets last season? Defenses can really pressure Allen if their defense doesn't step up as much this year. And I think defenses can pressure him anyway because of the lack of talent that he has around him. I mean, this is the kind of season, you don't want to predict this for anyone, but this is the kind of season where we could see a Josh Allen injury, or if he does get injured, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I do not think that this is one of those seasons where Josh Allen and the Bills are just going to create some magic and be really competitive and at the top of the AFC again. I do not. I like their win total under, and I think we have to be very careful betting on the Buffalo Bills early in the season. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe their defense is going to be just as good. Maybe they'll be fine. Maybe the wide receiver talent will come together and be fine. Maybe Josh Allen and seasoned coaching staff will just pull it together. I don't know. It feels like too many swings here, too many years in a row, and they lost too much in this offseason. Last but not least, Derek Carr. The assumption probably is, right, that year two should be better. I mean, hey, getting to 8 wins is juiced according to the odds makers, right? I mean, that could win their division. So odds makers expecting them to get to 8 wins, that's a pretty good year in the NFC South among a bunch of bad teams. But if you ask me, I don't think we're going to see any change at all. I think this is going to be a really frustrating team, a frustrating offense, and a defense that's getting older. I mean, Cam Jordan and Demario Davis are 35 and 36. They're aging. They're not in their prime anymore. Both great players. But you got to ask yourself, like, how much longer are they going to do this and lose? And I know Cam Jordan is doing other gigs, right? He's at the 33rd team doing some stuff. Alvin Kamara has fallen off. He's not the dynamic running back he is anymore. The wide receiver depth chart, besides Chris Olave, I don't think they're very good. And a bad offensive line. I mean, the pickup of Fuaga is nice, but I don't think that's enough. I mean, this used to be one of the best offensive lines season after season in the NFL, but they have really fallen off. And Derek Carr, man, I thought he was going to be a great fit for New Orleans. He's a southern, you know, he's a Christian boy down south there in the Christian New Orleans, Louisiana South. I thought it was going to be a good fit for him. But Dennis Allen should be brought to question. I mean, I don't think he's a great coach. I don't think they know what they're doing on offense. Maybe defensively they hang around because that's what Dennis Allen's good at, and they do have some nice young talent on defense. But I think we see another pretty frustrating year for the Saints. I would not expect much from Derek Carr, from this offense, and ultimately from the Saints, either as a covering team or in their win total. Last but not least, a few quarterbacks just to mention. Be careful on Jordan Love, C.J. Stroud, and Baker Mayfield. Last year was a renaissance for Baker Mayfield, a coming out party for Jordan Love and C.J. Stroud. But now everybody knows that, right? Defenses know that. They have a full season of film, right? Jordan Love, I don't think, is just going to waltz into Detroit like he did on Thanksgiving and dominate the Lions defense. I don't think C.J. Stroud is just going to go on the road in the AFC South and just murk these other teams. They got a bullseye on their back, and Baker Mayfield, still an aging team over there. Baker Mayfield getting a little more full of himself. I don't love that. We saw what the result of that was on the Browns. I mean, consider guys like Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Tua, Geno Smith. All these guys came back down to earth after big seasons. Mac Jones now, I mean, that was, it's been bad for a while, but that first season was pretty damn good. Tua burst out into the scene. Geno had that great year 2 years ago, but the NFL figures it out. Defenses figure it out. And on a positive side, honorable mention, watch out for some improvement from Trevor Lawrence, Kyler Murray. Love Kyler Murray with Marvin Harrison. I think that's going to be a dynamic duo. Trevor Lawrence was one of the most sought-after draft prospects in the history of the NFL for a reason. Okay, he gets another year with Doug Peterson. I think he has to look better. If he doesn't, then he's just a massive bust. But I would expect him to look better this year, and I think it's a good fit for Russ and the Steelers. Russ saying he feels young. I mean, Russ is always saying positive stuff, but he's a little more humble now, right? He's got to be a little more humble after what he's gone through the past few seasons. I think prospects could be better for them. That's it for Laying the Points in this week's episode. I love talking quarterbacks, love talking NFL, love talking sports betting with all of you. Thank you for listening to Laying the Points with Farley Betts. We'll be back. Look forward to more guests coming on Laying the Points in the future and a new NFL podcast that we are building behind the scenes. More to come from that. Follow me at Farley Betts. Look at our free picks at sportswagers.live. See you guys soon. Let's win some damn money.